This podcast is part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, a program designed to help all podcasts reach their full potential. For information about joining the Robots Radio Rocket Club, check out robotsradio.net.
Hey, so before we dive in, I just wanted to share with you real quick that I now have a Patreon. I have no plans to include corporate advertising on the show, so if you'd like to support what I'm doing here, I hope you'll check it out. I've got some great rewards at every level, including, for Tier 2 and Tier 3 subscribers, an invitation to record and send me your thoughts about a character I've covered on the show to be included in a future episode. Check it out at patreon.com/firewriter, and you can find the link in the show notes. Thanks so much for being a listener. On with the show.
Hi everyone. Before we get going, I just wanted to offer up a content warning that the following conversation does include conversation about child loss, miscarriage, and mention of the Holocaust. Thanks so much, and on with the show.
Welcome to the Pixel People Podcast, where we go beyond the quest lines to discover the backstories and motivations of our favorite video game NPCs to better understand them and ourselves. I'm Amelia, also known as Firewriter, and each episode I'm chatting with a special guest about a character they find particularly interesting. Since we're taking a close look at how these characters impact the story, please be aware that spoilers are likely. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Welcome to Pixel People. I'm Amelia, aka Firewriter, and today we're going to do something very different. I have gathered together a bunch of previous guests, and we are going to look at a topic through a series of different characters. So we're reversing it. Instead of focusing on the character, we're going to focus on the topic. And our topic is going to be transformation and redemption. So I would like to start by introducing our esteemed panel of guests, and we will kick it off with the wonderful Nyx.
Hi. I'm Nyx, so you know me from I talked about Sharon from Fallout 3.
Yay!
Yay.
Go
ahead. Sorry.
You're fine. The joy of going first, I know, right?
I know. No, it's fine. Sharon wouldn't be scared. It's fine.
There you go. And we also have Kelly Danielle back.
Hi, everyone. You might remember me from the episode we did about MacReady, and I'm really excited to be back. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Also joining us is the fantastic Toon.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. You might remember me from a previous episode where we talked about Vivek from the Elder Scrolls series.
Yeah, he just recently came up in the Discord again, too. I was like, I know that guy. Joining us again, too, is Mothman's Ranger.
Hello, I am back. You
are back.
You would remember me from my episode. I talked about Edelgard from Fire Emblem Three Houses, and it is good to be here. I am very excited for the subject and my character.
Awesome. And returning with us is KDB.
Hey, everyone. So I was on not the most recent episode, but a fairly recent episode, talking about the boss from Metal Gear Solid 3. And yeah, really glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thanks. And we have Sulior.
Hey, thanks for having me once again. I was on an earlier episode where we talked about Kodlak Whitemane from Skyrim.
Yes. And last but never least is Victor.
Hi, everyone. Glad to be here. You would remember me from the first episode of the Pixel People where I talked to Firewriter about Hancock from Fallout 4.
Yes, very first episode. It's like, it feels like so long ago. It's so, that's crazy. A lot has happened since then. All right, so let's go ahead and dive into introducing our characters. Nyx, who have you brought for us?
Well, this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, but I brought another ghoul boy. Uh-oh. we got Gob from Fallout 3. So nice. Starting with a little more negative transformation, I suppose. Little sad boy. So he is the bartender at Megaton, if you're unfamiliar. You find him at Moriarty's saloon, and he is enslaved. So he wasn't before, and then Moriarty found him and bought him from slavers. And now Gob is working at a bar. I'm very sad.
Aww. That's interesting that you chose to go kind of a more... Because, yeah, there are different ways a person can be transformed. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to go that particular route?
I don't know. I feel it was important to show that, you know, not all transformation's positive, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, it's... Sadly, it's an unfortunate reality that there's negative with every positive. You know, the poor guy just left to find fortune, and then he got caught in the wrong place, wrong time. And, yeah. So, it's sad. He's a little tragic little guy.
Do you think there's an opportunity there for a more positive change for him in the end?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you kill Moriarty, he takes over the bar, so...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right.
So you can do that.
So it's also positive.
Yeah, so it can turn positive. Just, you know, just don't get caught, because then...
Just don't get caught. Yeah. It's the rule of so much in Fallout. Don't get caught.
Stealth boy, it's fine.
Awesome. Was there anything else you wanted to share about Gob?
Not in particular, but, you know, I'm down for questions later if people have those.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Kelly Danielle, would you like to tell us who you brought?
Yeah, so I brought Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn. She is the main character. She's who you play as in the game. And what's interesting about her, and spoiler warning, if anyone hasn't played it yet, skip over me if you haven't played it. She starts out as an outcast, and she has to go through a trial to become one of the members of the tribe that she's been longing for so long to be a part of, and ends up becoming one of the most respected people in the tribe near the end of the game. And what's neat about her is that she has this really strong will to live and to prove herself throughout the entire story, her entire story. And I don't know, I just think she's so great.
So Horizon Zero Dawn is one that I started and unfortunately didn't get very far in. And I need to, I think, give it another shot. This is one of the games that I bounced off of because of mechanics. Mm-hmm. I definitely want to do it again because it was so pretty.
It's a beautiful
game.
And
what I saw of it was so just fascinating and interesting that I definitely want to dig more into that one and actually get to know everybody better.
Yeah, I definitely would give another playthrough before the second one comes out. That way.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. There is another one coming out. Yeah. Yeah. Good advice. And I think I have a character lined up from that game for a future episode. So I definitely will need to jump in and explore it a bit more thoroughly.
Of course.
Awesome.
Toon, who'd you bring for us?
Today I have brought with me Sir Daniel Fortescue, who is the protagonist in Sony's game Medieval, which came out in 1999. He is an undead hero, but in his previous life, I guess you could say, he was the champion of this kingdom of Galamir, the champion of the king's army. And he is he's battling against this evil necromancer named Zarek, who's trying to take over Galamir and just trying to destroy people with his undead army. And Daniel is actually the first person to die in the battle, but he is remembered as the hero of Galamir and has this beautiful crypt built for him because the armies of Galamir held off Zarek in their assault on the kingdom. And he's remembered as a hero, but he really wasn't. He was the first one to die. Arrow through the eye, first volley of arrows from Zarek and his undead horde. But then he goes on to redeem himself and actually live up to his hero status by getting accidentally resurrected by Zarek in his second coming of trying to take over the kingdom of Galamir 100 years later from the previous battle. And he rises from the dead and goes on. No spoilers here. The game's over 20 years old. I think we can all agree on that. He goes on to be the champion and actually live up to his hero status.
So he kind of covers both aspects of that really well.
He
so
does.
He's both transformed and redeemed.
He's an all-encompassing character for this particular theme.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. I love this. Okay. Ranger, who have you got for us?
Funnily enough, I come with a character who's also all-encompassing of the thing we're here to talk about today. Revan.
Excellent.
From Star Wars KOTOR. So he starts out as a Jedi, and then he goes, and because the council during like this stage again in a war against the Mandalorians, he starts out as a young Jedi who is very upset with the council for not trying to defend the Republic against the attacking Mandalorians. So he leads a group of rogue Jedi to basically fight the Mandalorians without the council's permission, and he wins. And they win the battle, and he disappears into the unknown regions, which are basically just deep space. He just disappears. And he comes back as Darth Revan, a powerful dark side user with a army of the Sith to try and take over the Republic. But in KOTOR, this is a big spoiler for the game, so if nobody's played it, I apologize, and you might want to skip over me.
Once again, it's like how old is the game?
Yeah, it's like over a decade old at this point.
Yeah.
So when they return during the war, Malak basically betrays Revan, and basically it's assumed Revan's dead. But at a certain point in KOTOR, it's revealed that, surprise, your character is Revan, who, after being severely injured by Malak's betrayal, had his memory wiped, and basically the Jedi Council re-put him into the Republic military and to fight Malak. And it's really cool because it's choice based, it's super choice based. But in the former canon, because it's no longer canon, but the Revan character is canon. I mean, I'm not going to get into that. And the canon storyline, Revan was a man. And after he was redeemed by the council and went to fight Malak as a Jedi, and he find out who he was, he chose to stick with the light side of the Force and defeat and stop Malak. And it's like he's got a very cool thing about him, where he falls to the dark side because of his pride and arrogance in the Mandalorian War, and then when he's redeemed by, his own apprentice practically, because his apprentice betrayed him. So it's kind of like this whole cool dynamic of redemption and transformation that he goes through throughout his story. It's a really interesting dynamic.
Awesome.
I love it.
Nice. Yeah, as soon as I told you what the theme was, you were like coming back at me just with all caps and images and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, I immediately just was like, wait, can I do Darth Revan? And then I just sent the gif of him with the purple and red lightsaber, the lightning crackling around him.
You were not messing around. Awesome. So, KDB, who'd you bring?
So I'm probably going to talk for a couple of minutes longer, if that's okay.
I feel
like I'm going to be rambling now because I've written some notes down, and then everybody's given these really brilliant, concise sort of introductions to their characters, and I'm like, mine is not that concise. But I promise I'm not going to speak for like 10 minutes, but it's probably going to be more like five. Anyway,
you got this.
So I brought Annette Birkin from Resident Evil 2. Now, in particular, the remake. There is an original. This is the 2019 remake, so I'm sticking to that story and her story in that game. And I'll give a little bit of context to the character, and then I've just got a few thoughts, obviously, on this theme. This theme of redemption and transformation. I mean, I've kind of more focused on the redemption side, and this, to me, is really, really interesting. And, you know, these margins of how somebody actually can redeem themselves. You know, what do they need to do to redeem themselves from years or like negative behavior? And I think that differs, you know, case to case. So, but as far as Annette goes, so she is a virologist employed by the Umbrella Corporation from Resident Evil. They're a pharmaceutical company that works on secret projects creating biological weaponry. And in the 80s, she married a fellow scientist there, William Birkin, and they developed a relationship, and they were both working at this underground lab. And they also had a daughter together. Their daughter's called Sherry. And over the course of the next decade, Annette and William, they prioritized their work over their marriage and their daughter. And they had been, in particular, working on a project called the G-Virus, which was seen as like the most powerful bioweapon in production on Earth at the time. And Annette and William's relationship with Umbrella began to kind of wear thin, because they felt that Annette in particular felt that they weren't getting the recognition they deserved, and, you know, promotions and pay and things like that. So they hatched a plan to, they were going to sell this virus to the military and kind of, you know, leave Umbrella and go off on their own. But because Umbrella is this big evil corporation, they had spies in the military, so their plan was discovered. And then this led Umbrella to trying to take out William Birkin, her husband. He injects himself with this virus, turns himself into this big ugly monster, and he kills the team that tries to take the virus from him. And then he proceeds to seek out his own daughter, who he knows, despite his transformation, she's going to be a viable host for this virus that he now wants to spread, you know, around the planet. And during this time, so the city that the lab is under, the city's beginning to crumble because the virus has leaked into the water supply. I'm not sure if anybody's familiar with Resident Evil, but it's primarily, you know, it's about zombies and, you know, biological weaponry, as I said. And so there's a zombie outbreak in the city, and Annette continues to kind of protect the research and monitor William. And even though he's this big mutated mess, she's obsessed with seeing the virus succeed and obsessed with kind of seeing their work succeed. But as the city is falling, she crosses paths with the other main characters of the game, and also her daughter Sherry, who this whole time while the city's been crumbling has been hiding in the local police station. Annette, she also tries to kill somebody. There's this spy called Ada. She tries to kill this person. William does actually successfully infect his own daughter with the virus. And it's once Annette discovers this that she comes kind of face to face with sort of the road ahead. You know, she's now got to make a choice. She's got this conflicting focus of her work as a scientist, and she's also a mother. And she's seen now that her daughter is in serious, serious danger. And so she decides to help one of the main characters from the game find a vaccine for her daughter. And she decides that her husband and the virus must be stopped altogether, because she doesn't want her daughter growing up in a world with the virus in it. And there's this big face off, and she blasts William with acid, but she gets slammed into a wall and gets horrific injuries. And then, although William is taken down, Annette's injured really badly, and she helps the main character from the game, Claire, administer a vaccine to Sherry, her daughter. So Sherry is saved, and she apologizes to Sherry. These are sort of her dying moments. She's on her deathbed, and the lab begins to crumble around them and stuff like that. And it's all crazy and chaotic, but Annette succumbs to her wounds. She's apologized to her daughter. She saved her daughter, but she unfortunately doesn't make it. And that's her story from the game. But the reason I chose her is because, I suppose, kind of quite controversially, I'm not sure she does redeem herself. There's this debate in the Resident Evil community about whether she does or not. And this is why I mentioned that question of, what are the margins for redemption? Because she's basically had this life, you know, she's neglected her daughter for her entire life. And then there's 15 minutes of chaos and she suddenly changes her mind. And I'm wondering if her positive actions that late in the game and in the story, do they make up for everything she's done before? And I'm not sure about that. And I think for me, this idea of, you know, being a neglectful parent and prioritizing your work over your family, these are all stuff. She is not likable. She's not a likable character. But then, you know, is she the product of society being forced to commit to her work to be able to provide a life for her family? And where do the lines blur? There's just loads of questions in there for me that, as far as Annette goes, I'm so undecided on her, and I thought I'd present that story sort of here today, and then in a little while maybe see if anybody else had any thoughts, and maybe I could make my mind up.
That's really interesting. You know, it's funny, I was just thinking too, that really kind of digs into some of the things we touched on when did the episode on Mistress of Mystery. A lot of similar situations there. Although I don't think anybody was redeemed in that. Just sort of a disaster from beginning to end. But, you know, the idea of the neglectful parent who's trying to do something, you know, bigger than themselves, and, you know, kind of the chaos that that occurs because of that. Awesome. So, Sulior, who have you got?
So, this character is also a bit different for where... you don't really know if they actually go on the path for redemption, but you kind of set the stage where they could. I am here with the Bloody Baron from The Witcher 3. So, yeah, this character is not a good person in any way, shape, or form. You kind of figure that out throughout the quest. So, through the whole... reason why you come across this character is for a good portion of the game, Geralt is searching for Ciri for a number of reasons. And kind of like what Tom said in the episode you did with Ciri, a lot of the choices you make, there are so many choices that you don't even realize that you're making that affect the outcome of a lot of different things that happen. So you're searching for Ciri, and you find out that she spent some time with the Bloody Baron, and he kind of blackmails you, saying, I'll give you this information that you're looking for, but you have to do something for me first. You know, just like any character in any RPG does. So he says that his wife and daughter went missing, and he wants you to find them, basically track them down and bring them back. So... you go up to where she stayed and you use your senses to kind of put together what happened, and you come to find out that there was a struggle and there was a lot of blood. So you kind of piece together that she was attacked by the Baron himself. He went into a drunken rage and attacked her. And you come to find out that his wife was pregnant at the time, and she lost the baby. So you go down and you confront him with it. You're like, you're lying to me. What'd you do? So he comes clean and says, yes, that she was pregnant. She had a miscarriage, based on his drunken rage, you know, coming from his drunken rage. And you ask him more about it, like what happened, and basically he just threw the baby out like it was garbage. Like, he didn't even name the baby, and the baby becomes what's known as a botchling, and it's a creature that it's like a giant, you know, fetus, and it finds and drains the blood of pregnant women. So there's two different ways you can go about this. You can track down the botchling and kill it, or you can force the Baron to acknowledge what he did and basically put the botchling to rest, and by, you know, having the Baron acknowledge what it is, so say, yes, this is your baby here. And you ask him, like, did you name this child? And he said, no, why would I? You know, just even more saying, yeah, he just kind of threw this baby out. Didn't even acknowledge that it was a person. And you see that it actually was long enough to actually look human. And, Geralt's like, well, you need to think of a name, because names have power. So you find the botchling and you have the Baron carry it to where, you know, he buried it. And you turn it, you basically go through the process of turning it into what's known as a lubricant. And you can use the lubricant to find blood relatives. So you, I mean, it's a whole long process, but basically, like, you have him acknowledge that this was a person, and he does name the botchling Dea. Mm. And so it's not so, I mean, and then you know, of course, you keep going through the quest and you find the wife and the daughter, and they basically want nothing to do with them. So, and there's other things you can do with them later, which the choices that you make in the game affect what happens. Like, you can help him take out this city that's been infested with wraiths that's killed everybody, but when you go and find him, he's like, "Are you ready?" And I said, "Yeah, I've got some other things to take care of first." And come to find out that you basically said, "No, I'm not going to help you." But so it's not so much that he does redeem himself, but you force him to acknowledge that his actions not only affect himself, but everybody around him and the people who are supposed to be his subjects. And this quest kind of stuck out like a sore thumb to me because I don't talk about this a ton, but my wife and I have really struggled with infertility. Like, my wife kind of destroyed her body trying to, you know, get pregnant. And we've had 3 miscarriages, and then we also had an infant loss. I had a daughter that lasted about 5.5 hours. So to see somebody just kind of toss aside a baby like this really rubbed me the wrong way. So, I mean, I hope that eventually the Bloody Baron is, you know, turns out to be not so bloody in the end, and he does kind of have a change of heart, but I mean, we just don't know. That is
Wow, so. I'm so sorry to hear that. That's such a personal
connection there. Really, like I said, this is not a nice person, and you can actually basically calling him an asshole. And he's like, "Well, if you want this information, you need to help me." So, you find his daughter, and she wants nothing to do with him, and his wife ends up chaining herself in a way to these witches. But they just, they want nothing to do with him. And there's nothing you can do to get them back to the Bloody Baron. And, you know, and with his daughter, he just wanted to know that she was okay. So, I mean, maybe he did have a change of heart in a way. And he's like, "Well, you know, it's okay that you didn't bring her back. I just want her to know that, I just want to know that she's happy."
It's interesting that a couple of you have brought people who, like, had potential for redemption. We don't yet know whether that's something that happened or not. That's really interesting. Victor, who have you got?
I have Dr. Bridget Tenenbaum from Bioshock 1 and 2. And kind of in an opposite end of some of the characters talked about earlier is not so much whether or not she earned redemption, but she's actively seeking it.
Okay.
One of her dialogue lines that kind of gets repeated a bit is that she is trying to save the little sisters so that others, quote-unquote, others don't pay for my sins. Just as a quick background on her, at the age of 16, she was a prisoner at Auschwitz and viewed the scientific experimentations of Dr. Joseph Mengele, which ended up igniting a love for science in her in a strange way, and she survived the camps because she was assisting the scientists. Immediately afterwards, she went to Rapture, and practically the first thing she does while in Rapture is sees a smuggler who had crippled hands. And she's walking along the waterfront, and he's using his hands totally normally. She asks, "How'd that happen?" He got bit by a sea slug and ended up discovering Adam. And she was at the forefront of creating little sisters. She's basically the mother of the little sisters, in a way, alongside working with plasmids and creating the East in the Hole, which, spoilers for a game that's over a decade old, is Jack Ryan, the character you're playing as. And as time goes on, at first she's not really acknowledging. She doesn't really care too much about the human cost of what's happened because of her research. Namely, the little sisters, of course, and also Adam's sickness, which is what makes the splicers that you end up fighting in Bioshock 1 and 2 go insane. At the very beginning of Bioshock 1, rather than... you're given the option of saving or harvesting little sisters. And you're able to save them because of the plasmid that Tenenbaum gives you to be able to do that. With the good ending of Bioshock 1, everyone goes to the surface. Jack, all of the little sisters you saved, and Tenenbaum. What's especially unique to me is part of the plot of Bioshock 2 is she goes back. Because one of the lesser-known things about Bioshock 2 is that rather than creating little sisters out of the orphans of Rapture, there aren't any little girls anymore. And so they're kidnapping them off beaches all over the world. And she goes back to continue this own personal redemption that she feels she needs to go through. Because what she has done has hurt so many. And it's almost a case of, she's, in my opinion at least, she's gone above and beyond in redemption, but she's continually kind of beating up on herself because everything that, you know, she can kind of see that everything that happened in Rapture and the fall of Rapture and the Civil War and Bioshock 2 kind of started because she found out what Adam was and gave it to a market. So... like I said, it's a little bit different from the, do these characters deserve redemption, and more of a character who doesn't believe she deserves full redemption.
Hmm. That's an interesting point there. Like, somebody who's redeemed, who doesn't feel they've earned the redemption. It's kind of that idea of the leader who doesn't feel they deserve the leadership.
Yeah. Because, per the reason the whole paying for my sins line sticks in my head, is because the first time she meets Subject Delta, the character you play in Bioshock 2, and you're talking to her through a window, again, she repeats, these girls shouldn't pay for my sins. And between the whole sins thing and redemption, it's very clear that, like I said, she's just someone who doesn't believe she's earned any form of redemption at all. And she's an incredibly sympathetic character.
That's cool. Well, thank you. Yeah. Thanks, no everyone, problem. For all of these cool characters. So I want to open it up a bit now. Is there anybody who would like to kick off the conversation? Ranger, go for it.
Alrighty. So the... kind of along the lines of a character who was redeemed doesn't really feel like they deserves it. They deserves it. Wow, good grammar, me. Is like Revan. Back during the Mandalorian War, how he won the war was atrocious. He used a super weapon that's meant to like create a planetary shield. I'm trying to remember precisely. I don't remember 100% what it was, but I think it was a super weapon that was like a planetary shield, and he basically used it to destroy Mandalore. The Mandalorian homeworld, mm-hmm. and caused just a massive amount of death, and is just like he's just something a Jedi should never do, and it's what started him down the dark path. But there's a book, one of the Star Wars Legends books called Just Revan, and it's about post events of KOTOR, Revan trying to remember what had happened and everything. And there's, like, this sort of plotline in the book of him just can't not believing that he did some of the atrocious things he did when he became, like, a Sith. And him, like, just struggling with that. Because, even when he came back from Unknown Space as Darth Revan and started his war against the Republic, he orbitally bombarded cities and killed millions. As part of his campaign. Uh-oh. Fire is just
sorry about that.
But like orbitally bombarded cities, killing millions with no remorse, and like just stopping at nothing to destroy the Jedi and take over the Republic. And like it's just him dealing with that in the book, and him trying to figure out where he got the Sith army from in the first place. Like, why he came back as Darth Revan, because he can't remember most of it because of him, his memory and stuff being rewritten by the Jedi Council after his injury and stuff.
KDB, you had something you wanted to say there?
Yeah, just because what I was thinking before Ranger even spoke, actually, it kind of follows on from that. Like, lots of these characters, well, there's a bit of a mix. Some of them have really clear, from what it sounds like, really clear redemption arcs, which I love, you know, as well as the next person. It's really great to see that happen. You know, there's lots of movies and games and books with obvious characters where this happens. But for me personally, I do prefer the characters that have come up where the lines are a bit more blurred. And like I said at the start, the questions about what it takes to actually redeem yourself from your actions and the things you have done. And this is stuff that I think about a lot, because we particularly now, I think, and I'm not going to get too sort of, you know, I don't know what the right word is to say, too shouty about something, but you know, we can be very quick to judge people sometimes, and particularly in the age of the internet and stuff, you know, judgment and shaming is this constant thing. So there's this complex answer in there somewhere where I don't know what it takes for people to redeem themselves. Like, I feel like somebody can change their worldview that they have cultivated for years and years and years. That can be changed in literally an instant, in a matter of seconds. But then also, some people, it doesn't matter what you say to them, for some reason, it won't change their worldview. So they're just going to carry on this negative path that they're on of destruction, you know, hurting people around them or whatever, and hurting themselves and all this kind of stuff. So I think, because I try to think about my own life, I'm like, I think I've done good stuff. But if someone said to me one day, you need to now redeem yourself for all the bad things you've done in my life, I don't think I've done that much bad stuff in my life, I just want to say. But, you know, maybe in the eyes of some people, we all might have. What is the measuring stick for this kind of stuff? And is it based on time? Is it based on, you know, it's so weird. And I don't know what the answer is. And I don't know if anybody has thoughts on, you know, is it literally an eye for an eye type stuff, or can you just do one act of kindness and at least express that you are regretful and you know, that stuff that you did before, you know it was wrong and you're now on a better path and you've proved it through this initial action. Is that enough, or is it always a case of, no, you've got to spend years making up for the stuff you've done? Because then I look back at the character that I picked today, and as I say, she does sort of 10 minutes of great work, but does that make up for neglecting her daughter for her entire life?
Yeah, I think it's interesting too, because I think that the bar changes constantly as well. Suliar, I saw you unmute as well.
I was just going to make a comment about the whole thing with Darth Revan and the Mandalorian Wars. I just thought it was kind of interesting how one of the companions you can get in the game is a Mandalorian from the Mandalorian Wars, and he mentions that he doesn't hold a grudge against Revan for what he did in the during the Mandalorian Wars. He actually respected him for it. So take that for what you will. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I just thought that was interesting. He's like, you know, it was war. You did what you had to do.
Yeah. Victor, you had something you wanted to jump in with?
Yeah, ironically, it actually kind of combines the Resident Evil character that KDB brought up, and Star Wars to a degree, as with the kind of description given for the Doctor from the Resident Evil game. I was instantly reminded of Vader. And so that kind of brings up, you know, was Vader redeemed at the end? Because it's a similar thing. He was a Sith for so long, and then at the very last moment, he stands up against the Emperor and dies a Jedi for his son, which is proven with the Force ghosts. So it's definitely something interesting to think about of, you know, just more thinking along the lines of does a deathbed statement of regret truly redeem someone or not?
Yeah. Nyx?
I think Kelly was first. She can go.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Sorry, so nice. Grab order.
go for it.
So kind of piggybacking off of what KDB said. What's interesting about, so Aloy in particular, is that she is a clone. And she finds out in her journey. And she is the clone of this character, Elizabeth Sobeck, who actually helped create the sort of, spoilers, the dinosaurs, the machines that you fight. And what Aloy struggles with at one point is if she's, the only reason why she was created was to redeem whatever Elizabeth Sobeck did and to help kind of like right her wrongs. So that when you were talking about like, what do I do to redeem myself, or like, how do I like go about redeeming whatever potentially horrible things you might have done, I just thought that was really interesting because Aloy was created to sort of right the wrongs that Elizabeth did. And she had to, and Aloy had to figure out how to sort of deal with that and then turn it around and realize that she is her own person. She doesn't have to be Elizabeth Sobeck, and she doesn't have to sort of, you know, make up for the horrible things that happened before she was born or created.
Oh, that's really interesting. Nyx, go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to go off what KDB said again, but like, in going back to our podcast episode with Sharon, in that, you know, like, what does it take to redeem yourself? And we had the whole discussion about, like, as the lone wanderer, you can offer that redemption to him, depending on how you go about the game and whatnot. But, so I just wanted to bring that back up, and it's like, I don't know if it's a matter of, you know, like, time or anything, because he's been in servitude for who knows how long, and such a simple act might be, like, the world to him, you know? Right. So I don't know. It's kind of just, it depends on the circumstances and the person, I guess, but
it seems to be a little bit of a theme in all the games, too.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're redeemed completely depends on what you decide to do. It's like,
No
pressure.
Yeah, like I said in the episode, it's like, if you play an evil character, disregard this entirely. Like, because, I mean,
of course.
But yeah, it's just, I think it's just an open air kind of thing, and I don't know. But Annette is such a good pick, too, I gotta say. I was sitting here like, whoa!
Yeah, she's such a, like, she's a relatively small character in the game, for those that don't know, but it's an integral role.
Oh, and yeah.
Yeah. One that caught my eye.
Great pick, awesome. Right there.
Toon, did I see you unmute?
Yeah, I was. I wanted to also, I thought what KDB said was fantastic. And somehow, sometimes, you know, redemption is relative. But what happens like when, you know, there's also repentance that goes into that too. Repentance, confession, and be like, I've been wrong. I've done wrong. I'm now changing my ways. But what happens if you have that sort of mentality and you have that sort of like active repentance, like that doesn't always necessarily lead to redemption either though, because the people who are you're indebted to may or may not be willing to receive that. And I was trying to think of other stories where that's happened. I can't think of one right off the top of my head, but that's a real thing in real life too.
I was going to say, we see that all the time in real life, just like watching Twitter.
Yes.
Like some celebrity says something outrageous, or not even necessarily outrageous, but just, you know, off.
Yeah.
And that's very much the conversation that sometimes we see, where they'll make an apology and there'll be a big conversation about whether that apology was enough, or whether the members of the community who were affected by the action accept the apology.
Yes.
That's definitely something that happens all the time. Ranger?
Yeah. So along, yeah, this entire conversation from what everybody said is like made me really like start going into what I was thinking with Revan and his book, because in the Legends book he basically goes on a quest to find out what the hell he found in the unknown regions and caused him to come back with the doctrine of the Sith. So he's been having like these nightmares about this stormy planet somewhere, and he's just kind of like, where are these from? It's like, why does this feel so familiar? So he basically goes on this journey to figure out what it means. And the book's canon storyline for Revan is that he marries Bastil the Shan, one of the characters from You Can Romance in KOTOR. And so he has to leave her behind while she's pregnant with their children. And he goes on basically on this journey of like trying to figure out what he found and trying to make up, at least in some way, even after he defeated Darth Malak, the leader of the Sith Empire that was attacking the Republic and brought peace. He's still trying to make up for what he's done. He's still going on his journey to try and fix everything. And so he goes, he looks, and he figures out that, oh, surprise, spoilers for the book, and just practically this entire era of pre-Disney Star Wars, there's a giant hidden Sith Empire hiding in the fringes of an unknown space. And so he finds the capital, Dromund Kaas, and he starts remembering things, and he realizes that the emperor of this hidden Sith Empire is super powerful. Like, this man is hatching schemes upon schemes hundreds of years in the future. Like, he's got to stop this guy, even if it kills him. Even if he can't see his wife and his unborn children when he left. So, like, he basically tries to assassinate the emperor, and he completely fails. But in his failure, he figures out a way to at least buy time. What the emperor does, he captures Revan instead of killing him, and basically how the emperor stayed alive for so long is he's used the force energy, force sensitives like Jedi and Sith, and fed off of it to remain immortal. And so he takes Revan to be one of those people, but Revan figures out while he's in this suspended state of getting his life drained and stuff, he figures out that he can influence the emperor's thoughts. He can basically stall the emperor's plans for as long as he's still got force energy in him. And Revan, for the record, is one of the most powerful force sensitives to ever have been born. So he's able to do this for quite a long time, so long in fact that like an entire, I think it's like a generation or two passes before the Sith Empire reveals itself from the shadows and invades the Republic.
Okay.
It's just
so that kind of rolls into, you know, the idea of, you know, like, redemption through sacrifice.
Yeah, like how far one has to go to make up for the atrocious sins of their past.
Right. KDB?
Yeah, so something else does keep coming up in these characters' stories, and I think it was a point I'd written down before we started. And with a lot of redemption stories, it often takes like something really catastrophic and sad and horrible to happen for this character to actually gain perspective. And, you know, what many of us are kind of ignorant to problems and I guess toxic behavior or just negative behavior and negative actions until something literally stops us in our tracks to kind of either like I say, change your worldview or rip something away from you. And, you know, a lot of this can be compared to stuff that's just happened in the past 15 to 18 months and just in the world. You know, a lot of people struggle to face certain things until the unthinkable happens. And so you can take a lot of these stories as a lesson on like perspective. And for me, like one of my personal values, something which I think is so important, is to be self-aware, like of yourself. Oh, and not, I don't mean like, you know, vanity. I mean to be aware of, you know, what you do, the effect that it has on people around you. And you need to take stock of things in your life and to weigh up like the cause and effect of all of these actions, especially kind of when it concerns your loved ones, because technically, they're supposed to be the people that you care about the most. So, you know, change is, there's exceptions to that rule, of course, like some people are sort of stuck in situations maybe that they didn't ask for and all this kind of stuff. But I mean, in a general sense, with like a character like Annette, she made choices which had a negative effect due to her obsession and her complete lack of self-awareness. And so it's really like touching that she realized at the end that, you know, she was wrong, but the fact that it took the literal physical suffering of her own daughter to be infected with a virus by her mutated husband and coming face to face with her own mortality, it's like, oh, it's a shame, you know, that it takes, like I say, a catastrophic event for people to suddenly look the other way and go, oh, hang on, maybe what I've been doing wasn't right, and can I now do the right thing? So how do people, I guess, educate themselves to be more self-aware so that they don't get to that point in the first place is, you know, another question that's sort of interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting that you mentioned that for the last, you know, 15 months, because, you know, we've come around to that kind of 1 year anniversary of last year with the Black Lives Matter movement. And we saw so much happening with corporations, you know, who had basically been ignoring the problem for so long. And all of a sudden they couldn't ignore it anymore. But a year later, what's actually been done by any of them? Everybody made all these big, huge statements. But what has anything really changed? You know? I saw you. Didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, it's fine. I was just agreeing with you. Sorry.
Okay, go ahead, Tune.
And I was going to agree with KDB. I think what he said is fantastic about just like the whole world needs a dose of self-awareness. And,
oh God, yes.
And it takes that element of humility and that element of selflessness to be able to admit fault or admit wrong. And I thought that was beautifully said by him and by you, KDB. I should just speak directly to you. Thought you said it beautifully. And I think that's something that the whole world needs to hear is just this, the self-awareness before we speak, before we say something like, who is this affecting? How are we affecting someone? And what does this say about ourselves with the words that we say to people? And the words really matter. And I just love the way that he put that.
That's awesome. Did anybody else want to chime in there?
Oh no, I've silenced people.
Kelly, Danielle, go ahead.
Hey, you did great.
Yeah.
It's a lot to think about. Yeah.
It's that way with most, pretty much all these characters, my character included, where, you know, you have to force somebody to acknowledge what they've done and how it not only affects themselves, but everybody around them.
I think we see that in a lot of the games too, just like that moment of reckoning. Kelly, Danielle, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that they put it beautifully in that it was a nice like little bow, that like section. That's all.
Can't really put it much better than that. Yeah.
And I also think that we also have to be willing to forgive people who are actively seeking repentance and redemption too.
Yes.
I think that's important too. Like you said earlier, Fire, about like if we're always just judging like whether or not somebody's active seeking forgiveness or repentance is sincere or not, like we really are just spinning our wheels and not really going anywhere. So I think that also seeking to really take people at their word and take people at face value when they're seeking to be redeemed or to repent of certain actions, I think it's important for us to also be people who are willing to receive that as well.
Yeah. And, I just had a thought and it just like, it was there for like just a fraction of a moment and then it vanished. We'll see if it comes back. Sulior, did I see you?
Yeah. It's just, you know, grudges, holding a grudge takes so much time and energy to have it. You know, I personally just don't have the time to do that or the energy.
I know it does take a lot of energy. It's exhausting.
Well said.
Kelly, Danielle,
I was gonna say that we have to do that for ourselves too, so
such a good point. Oh my god,
are,
yes,
you know, humanly we change, we continue to grow and change, and someone out there is gonna see you as who you used to be, whether you were a nice human or not so nice human, or you've done some things that were questionable, or
and you've changed and you've tried to better yourself, there's always going to be someone out there who is going to see you who you used to be and refuses to see who you are now. And we can't dwell on that, because if we know that we are doing whatever we can to better ourselves as a human and for our family, for our friends, for ourselves, holding that internal grudge against, oh, this person still sees me as that, and you know, that really is upsetting. We can't do that. Because if we hold on to it.
I'm feeling so added right now.
Yeah. Because if we hold on to it, we're never going to grow. We're just going to keep that endless cycle of, you know, self-grudging.
Yeah. That's such an amazing point. That's such a good point. Because we have been looking at it like from a completely external perspective this entire time. But internal transformation is just, I mean, more important. And I'm so glad that you brought that up. Ranger?
Yeah, I was just gonna like bring up the fact that like as hard as it is to try and seek redemption for actions you think that are just like so terrible that they can't they can't be like repented for, it can be just as hard for somebody who's holding those actions against you to try and forgive you.
Yeah.
Like it takes just the same amount of strength.
That's so true. Toon?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, it's also important not to neglect that we certainly want to see justice for things that have happened as well. It's not that, you know, if you've done something wrong that you don't there needs to be justice done or there needs to be some sort of punishment served. But ultimately, like moving down that path of redemption and the path of people actually forgiving somebody is such an important thing that I think the internet needs and the world needs.
Right? Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Victor.
Yeah. Especially with talking about like internal transformation. I wanted to double check my resources, so I'm in the Bioshock Wiki right now. But with Tenenbaum, at least, there's an interesting kind of double transformation in their story. They, while they're experiencing the absolute horrors that were the concentration, she still saw something in there that gave her hope and gave her a sense of meaning within the experimentation. And so that kind of transformed her to this person who was willing to do human and child experimentation while in rapture. And that's not a typical kind of transformation. And it's me just interpreting it, but I went ahead and I looked up the audio log where she describes where I at least interpret she's realized what she's done. Essentially, a little sister gets up onto her lap and she pushes them off, getting away, and they see this little girl who, quote-unquote, has oozing out of their mouth, filthy hair and glowing eyes. I feel hatred. I can barely breathe. And suddenly I know it is not this child that I hate. She has that moment of looking at what she's done and realize she's become, to a certain degree, this monster. And so part of the reason why I love her story is because she does have that double transformation of a normal and apparently autistic girl, according to Ken Levine, the creator of Bioshock, a normal girl who gets exposed and transforms into someone who is willing and almost times eager to do human experimentation to expand their own knowledge. And then they transform into realizing why, maybe not why, but how bad that can be from the other side to make the transformation to the point where she is actively seeking redemption. But like I said, even in Bioshock 2, she really doesn't act like she feels like she's deserved any kind of redemption or slack, despite what she's done for dozens and dozens of little girls, little sisters, over the course of the games.
Yeah. KDB?
Sorry, I was just struggling to hit the unmute button there.
Oh, no problem.
God, this is so much self-reflection for a Saturday afternoon for me. what was I going to say? It was that. So something Victor said, just there was a point in there about that moment of realization and realizing you know, where your issues lie, you know, and what it is you have a problem with, and or what you hate, or for want of a better phrase, or whatever, however you want to sort of frame it. And then I'm really sorry, I can't remember. I think it was Toon who said, you know, it is so relative, you know, this idea of the things we find are despicable, and how we judge, you know, ourselves and other people. And I'm looking back again at the character that I chose, and I think about the episode we did on the boss, and I think of other characters that I like, and there's always a trend for me personally. There's stuff in there that just rings true with sort of my own values. And that doesn't mean that there aren't other characters out there that I can't learn from, and the things, the perspectives that they have, and then the perspectives that everybody's kind of brought here today. It's just, yeah, this, I just wanted to sort of point out that it's so kind of valuable, as I say, all this reflection. I'm hearing all these other different ways to look at redemption, and I'm looking at somebody like Annette, and I'm like, she's a terrible parent, she's prioritizing her work and all this kind of stuff. This is stuff for me that at this point in my life personally, you know, I have a young son, and you know, I that's like the focus of my life. But maybe later in life my views will change slightly about what I'm more I suppose angry about, or and it was different to when I'm younger as well. So this idea of just blanketly setting a line that everybody shouldn't cross, and it's just so there's just so much complexity in there across all these characters and across people that I know. And a long way to a short point, really. It was just giving me some really cool perspectives that I hadn't even considered, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of a universal thing that, you know, I mean, it goes back in stories forever and ever, the, you know, the redemption arc. I know that that's something that, you know, if you look at all of my favorite characters, that tends to be a really common trait that they have. There tends to be that redemption arc. And it just, I don't know if it's because it's something that I feel like I need for myself in some way, or if it's just that piece of humanity that I'm connecting to, or what it is, but those are always my favorite characters. Ranger?
The thing about Vic, when Vic said the, like, becoming something that you never wanted to be, like,
yeah,
that's like such a huge theme in game, in like games and just media that I, and stories that I enjoy. Like, a character that becomes the exact thing they were either fighting against or just never wanted to become. Like, it's a great concept of, like Star Wars does it a lot. Like, Revan being a Jedi, then taking a dark path to defeat the Mandalorians and becoming a Sith, and the Jedi were founded to combat the Sith. And then, like, the classic line from Revenge of the Sith, from Obi-Wan to Anakin, you have become the very thing you swore to destroy. It's like the same, it's the dynamic of, like, how easy it is to break or cross the line to basically you being the same as what you're fighting against. Like,
such a common thread in so many stories too, you know, that idea that it's so much harder to do the right thing.
Yeah, like it takes, it's always, yeah, like Mass Effect does a good job of it too, and its Paragon and Renegade systems, in which the Paragon routes almost always have an inherent risk of failing your greater mission, but and they always have you go in roundabout manners to solve the solution you're intending to fix. Like the Renegade option is just like, it's like as if like it's like there's a roundabout, you're coming up to a roundabout, right? But instead of just going around the roundabout and just like a normal person, you just cut straight through the roundabout to go to the other side of the road that you're trying to get to your destination. Like,
just, and sometimes even if you're playing Paragon, that that Renegade's option can be so satisfying.
It can be
You just really want to throw that guy off the bridge, yeah, or whatever.
Yeah, and it's like it's just a common theme that it's always harder to try and do the good thing just because the wrong or object from just a, I don't know, I wouldn't want to say wrong because it might be right in some situations, But it's like, yeah, where the wrong option will get you there faster at the cost of hurting some other people or damaging something else.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think Renegade in that game isn't, you know, you said it, but it isn't always necessarily wrong. It's just the more direct or aggressive route sometimes.
Yeah, like a good example of it is like, it's a comical example, but it also has some merit. So like in, I think it's Mass Effect 2. Yeah, because you don't go to T'Chunka in Mass Effect 3. Or do you? No, you do.
Well, you do.
You do. But this instance was Mass Effect 2. When you take
Sacrifice and Redemption.
Oh, my God.
Anyway.
Yeah. But when you take Grunt to Mass Effect 2 to go through his trial to become a true Krogan, there's a Renegade option in which you can headbutt the asshole warlord who's trying to prevent Grunt from becoming a true Krogan because he's tank bred and whatever. But like the option to headbutt him, like I don't like, it's a Renegade interrupt, but it's like, to me, I never thought of it as really a Renegade action, even though obviously it is one, because it's like, that's part of their culture. Like Krogans will headbutt other Krogans if they want them to like stop talking. Like it's just, that's how they, it's like somebody saying shut up or be quiet with us, like when we're trying to get somebody to just stop talking. It's like, and it's like, it's a direct and more aggressive route, but
yeah,
it's also, it's like the culturally significant thing to do.
You know what's funny is I was actually thinking you were going to speak to a different situation that takes place on T'Chunka that's actually in Morden's story, because this was one where I play So Paragon, but I went Renegade on this, where this jackass of a Krogan is going on and on about all these awful things, and he says he's going to enslave the Salarians and eat their eggs, and Morden just makes this like, oh my God face, and I was like, I don't care that this is a Renegade action, I am shooting your ass because you are hurting my friend.
I did the same thing, and it's such a like it's funny because like it plays like the scene, like
the right thing to do.
Yeah, the scene plays out so comically because you shoot the explosive pipe and the gas starts leaking out, and the Krogan's like, ha, you missed, and then Shepard looks up, is like, did I, and shoots the gas, and there's just the explosion, and then the Krogan's on fire screaming running around, and then just it's just the funniest thing. It's like it's played off comically, even though it's like it's super violent, but it's played off in that situation as like you made the right choice.
It did feel like the right thing to do. Sulior, did you have something there?
Yeah, I was just gonna kind of comment on just relating to these people so much more than you would somebody who is portrayed as being like squeaky clean, never did anything wrong in their life. I think the reason why we relate to these people, I mean, nobody's perfect. So, I mean, to some degree, I mean, yeah, we're not committing like these mass atrocities that some of these characters have done. But, you know, like I said, nobody's perfect. And I actually went to a Christian high school and we had, you know, chapels on Wednesdays. And there actually was a speaker who basically was saying, you know, I've never done this. And it almost came across like he was bragging. And most of my classmates kind of, for the lack of a better phrase, were just like, dude, screw you. Like
it's just self-righteousness is all it is.
Yeah. So,
yep.
Yeah. I think, you know, we can at least relate to some of these people. In a sense, because, you know, what would you do if you were in their situation? Like, yeah, we might not be in some of these really extreme situations, but who's to say you wouldn't do something similar? Like, you know, at least in some of these situations, like, I would never commit, like, mass genocide or anything like that. But, yeah, I think that's the reason why we can, you know, these characters strike a chord with us.
Yeah. Next.
Oh, I was just going to touch up on what Sulior brought up. Suliore, as we affectionately call you.
Yes, thank you, Danny Shrago.
of relating to the characters, and, you know, I picked Gob, who's definitely not a hero redemption story by any means, really. At least to the degree of everyone else's characters, but he strikes a chord to me in that, you know, I don't know. This is emotional, so now I'm getting all like, fuck.
No, you're good. Go for it.
Of just like, you go out expecting good things, and then, you know, it's like, bam! And something transforms you, and you kind of feel like you have to redeem yourself, even though it's not your fault.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, God. I relate to that so deeply. So you're just going around doing your own life, and all of a sudden something horrible has happened to completely change your entire world. And how do you this is interesting because in a lot of cases we've talked about, you know, heroes on this grand scale. You're talking about a very normal, everyday person who's just going out and doing, living their life and trying to be the very best person they can and try to come back from this devastating situation that they found themselves in. And I think that, you know, whereas we love the big redemption arcs, I think a story like that is one that speaks so personally to us because it's something that we've probably experienced at some point in our lives.
Oh yeah. I mean, Gobbs is basically, you can equate it to leaving home for the first time and going out into the world, because that's what he did. He left his mother, quote unquote, but he left his mother and went to go, you know, make a life for himself, and then he got put into the shit pile. And it's like, all right, well,
what do we do with this? Yeah,
like, you know. So I don't know. It's just kind of speaking to that point of relating to the characters a little bit and their transformation / redemption arc.
Well, that's why, you know, sometimes these little seemingly minor characters just hit us in such a strong way, you know, and I think that speaks to what Sulier was talking about, too, that this is, you know, sometimes it's a blink and you miss them character, but they hit on something that is so personal to us, and, you know, for better or for worse, we just really connect to that particular story.
Oh, yeah. Sorry to get, like, emotional. I was, like, choking up talking.
What? Emotional on my podcast? No, don't apologize.
No, not at all.
Yeah, please don't apologize.
Like, sitting here bawling.
Oh. I'm throwing hearts at you. I know you can't see it, but I am.
I feel them. It's okay.
Ranger?
Like, speaking on, like, the striving to redeem themselves, like, like, because I brought up Mass Effect, because for some reason I always seem to be able to do that now recently. Thane, like, he's just, I'm surprised, man, Thane would have been a good person to bring to something like this. But Thane is also a good, great character that, redemption, and not really transformation, because he didn't really need a whole lot of transformation, because, like, he never enjoyed being an assassin all that much, like, well, killing people. He never enjoyed that. Mostly just like defeating bad people. He's what he did enjoy, because most of his targets were just not good people. But still, he never enjoyed just the killing he had to do. And then like the way he progresses, like you meet him in Mass Effect 1, and then if he does, as long as he survives a suicide mission, bring him into Mass Effect 3, and the way he changes a bit in Mass Effect 3 is just beautiful, and how it ends is so sad, but it's like it was inevitable in the first place, because he wasn't going he had a terminal illness, so he wasn't gonna last. But like, it's just the way he goes out is just so, it's so Thane.
I'm really hoping that he survives on this particular playthrough, because I very much want to see his story play out.
Yeah, he's just one of the best written characters in Mass Effect. And he was only introduced in the second game. Can you believe it? Like, by the third...
I feel the same way about Morden.
Yeah. Like, I went... Like most of the characters you meet in Mass Effect 2, I go into Mass Effect 3. It's like, oh, we've had such a long adventure together, guys. 100-plus hours of gameplay. Wait, no. I only met you guys in the second game. So, 50-plus hours of gameplay. It's like... It's still like I feel like I've known them since the first game. It's just... It's great when a game can really click that. Look at me talking about two BioWare games in one podcast. Anyway...
Sorry, I had to unmute. So, I didn't want to bring an Elder Scrolls or Fallout character to this, because I feel like it's been done
so many times. That's why I went through a character from The Witcher. But I think we can all agree that Parthenax would be like the perfect character for this.
Oh, good
and,
call.
He's got the perfect quote when you confront him after the blades send you after him. It's, what is better, to be born good or to overcome your evil nature through great effort? So I nearly brought Parthenax, so but I thought that would have been like really on the nose, but I thought I'd at least bring him up.
On the nose is good. Well, that actually, I want to ask a question kind of before we wrap things up. Do you guys think, can you come back from an atrocity? Is that possible?
Yes. However, to be able to do that, one must first be able to show humility and admit their wrongdoing and how they went wrong, and at least have some idea or even just a want to reform. They may not know exactly how to reform, but if you have someone who's done an atrocity, has looked back and realized how awful it is, truly apologized, and is at least looking for a way to make it up, even in some small way, even if they don't know exactly what that path is, I'd be willing to give them the chance to redeem themselves with all of those things in mind. So in general, yes, but a lot of people who end up committing those atrocities in the first place tend to not be the kind to look back on themselves and accept it with the humility.
Valid point. Yeah, that's really a valid point. Ranger?
Yeah, like, I do think it's possible. And, like, it's also, and, like, the being able to, like, recognize the stuff, like, the want to redeem themselves and the self-awareness to acknowledge what they've done is wrong. Like, it's interesting, because, like, it's such a weird situation with Revan, because it's hard to say if, like, Revan actually ever really properly redeemed himself, because, like, his memory was wiped, and he was completely almost completely reset, but he gained his memories back, right? But he didn't feel like they were him. And don't know if he, like, truly redeemed himself or made up for mistakes of, like, I don't know, a past life, because he kind of became a new person. It's interesting to at least when I think about Revan a lot. Revan's just one of my favorite characters.
Yeah. Toon?
Yeah, I think if somebody is actively seeking to be redeemed or repentance, I think we have to hold out hope for anyone, because I would want hope for myself if I had done something wrong in the eyes of society. Like, I would hope that we could hold out hope for anyone who actively is seeking repentance and redemption.
Yeah, I love that. KDB.
Yeah, I have to agree, and specifically with what Toon just said there. I don't like thinking about the dark, as it were, and, you know, you think about humans in history that may have done the worst things. And of course there is, you know, there's some obvious ones, but there's some less obvious ones. And I don't know, I'm very reluctant to say that nobody can come back from a certain place. However, I think in my mind, I'm still kind of battling with some exceptions to that rule. And then I'm still not sure what the justification is for the exceptions to those rules. And I'm not going to name, you know, people or types of people or actions that people do to try and put any kind of groups, you know, any kind of actions. You know, I don't want to just say murder or something like that. You know, I'm not going to say that stuff. But for me, it's, I would love to think that if I did something bad, that people were willing to give me a second chance and I could do something to prove that I'm changing my ways and all this kind of thing, rather than people just saying, oh no, you know you're a terrible person and you're always going to be a terrible person. So it's complex, but I think I'd like people to hold out hope.
I like that. Nix?
Yeah, I agree with everything, you know, said before, but it's also a matter of, like, and kind of tying off or continuing on with the point of how it's complex, like, sometimes atrocities can be seen as inevitable, you know? So it depends on, like, I mean, we're talking about characters in this particular instance, but, like, their culture and the world that they find themselves in. Like, the wasteland atrocities are committed left and right, and it's just, yeah. like, culture, you know? So, really, do they need to be redeemed in that regard, you know what I mean? But it's just, I don't know, like, it's more complex than meets the eye, I think, but of course we all want to be forgiven and, you know, not seen as evil or what have you. But it's circumstances play an important role too, I think.
I think that's an interesting point too, because, you know, I think that when we're looking at characters in a story, we're very quick to say, you know, yeah, but they're a product of, you know, the world that they live in, da 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 da. But then sometimes we forget to give that same grace, I guess, to perhaps a person who lived, you know, 300 years ago or something like that. And that's, you know, that's a conversation that has been kind of ongoing over the past few years.
Yeah, and I mean, even with latest events like pandemic life, you could argue, you know, there's been some stuff that people have done because of whatnot, and it's like, well, circumstances were different, you know? So I don't know, it's a rabbit hole.
It's tricky, yeah. We love a rabbit hole.
Hell yeah.
Tune.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, part of it goes, and to piggyback off what Victor said and what KDB said, it's about educating as well. Like, if you learn new information about something, you know, if you're informed, that can lead to a sense of redemption or repentance. So I think educating and informing people is also important.
Yeah, absolutely. When you know better, do better. That's definitely the... Thanks so much, you guys. This has been such a great conversation, and I really loved all the different paths that we took on this. You know, when you suggest the overarching theme, you don't know exactly where it's going to go. So I've absolutely loved everything that everybody's brought up, and you guys have brought up things that, you know, I didn't expect, and I love that so much. You guys are all wonderful. So I wanted to go through and give everybody a chance to tell folks what you're up to, where they can find you, and we'll go from there. So Nyx, you want to kick us off?
I guess. Well, in the podcast I did, I went by Trash Queen Nyx, but that has changed because of personal reasons. So now I am Trash King Nyx on all platforms.
Love you.
Aww. So yeah, you can find me there. I'm on Twitter, Tumblr, Twitch, yada yada yada. I'm everywhere. So
Kelly Danielle. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
You're fine.
Okay. Yeah, Kelly Danielle, go ahead.
Hi. Okay, let's see. You can find me on Twitter at KellyXDanielle and Twitch and Instagram at Kelly Danielle. And actually, starting the 24th, you can find me in the DreamHack Beyond online convention video game. Ooh, so if you guys want a free digital ticket, just slide into my DMs. So yeah, you could find me. That's the biggest thing I got going on right now is the DreamHack Beyond. So
awesome.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. Toon?
You guys can find me streaming over at Tooniversal Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern to 1 p.m. Eastern, twitch.tv/Tooniversal. I do a lot of Fallout content, been mainly focusing on Fallout 76, but I love all Bethesda games. And for all my socials and more information about me or anything that I do on stream, you can visit tooniversal.tv for that.
Awesome. Ranger?
Oh, me.
Yes, you.
I went into ADHD spectator mode.
You're great.
I'm on Discord, the Mothman's Ranger, and also on Twitch. I started streaming again, but then I kind of fell off of it because things started happening. But I hope to try and start doing more of that. But anyway, I'm just in the Pixel People server, and just hanging out most of the time, making stupid jokes, stuff like that.
We love you. KDB?
So I just wanted to quickly say, although today I might not have addressed every single one of you, at some point everyone has said something that has like really resonated with me, and I'm just kind of really thankful and grateful to have shared time with you all today. So, and obviously thank you, Firewriter, again for inviting me on.
Absolutely.
As for myself, I mean, I do sort of a few things. I stream on Twitch. I I have a podcast with Sulior as well. We have a Fallout podcast, Tapes from the Waste. I'm also a content creator with a Resident Evil community, First Aid Spray. You can find me there. But for all that kind of stuff, just come and follow me on my main Twitter account, which is K_D_B_.
Can I just say that First Aid Spray is a great name for a Resident Evil group?
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Sulior?
Yeah, so as KDB said, I've got Tapes from the Waste, and then I've got a couple of other podcasts, Nintendo and Tamrielic Adventures, where we talk about Nintendo things, all things Nintendo, and then Elder Scrolls lore. And from time to time, I also stream on Twitch at Sulior. And yeah, you can just find those. You can search them on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to follow me personally, it's IanGold08.
Awesome. And Victor.
Hi. I honestly don't have very many social medias, at least nothing that I'm actively putting anything out on yet. TM. But if you want to hang out with me or message me, I can be found through the through Fire Riders Discord. It's Victor with a K, VIKTOR, and I like talking to people.
Thanks again, all of you, so much. I appreciate this like more than I can possibly say. And yeah, there should be some big ending, but I don't have one. Aww, so
you're wonderful.
Thanks, yeah, thanks for inviting us. It's been great.
So glad to have fun. Made it.
Thank you for having all of us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Heck yeah.
Thank you for being
thank
here.
You.
Thanks for listening to the Pixel People podcast. Check out the show notes for links to the game and characters discussed and to connect with me and my guest. Want to be a guest on the show? There's a link in the show notes for a short form you can fill out and I'll reach out to you. A huge thank you to my patrons, especially my Tier 2 and 3 patrons, Red and Aperture Flash, and thank you to Elias Ali and Andy Brooks who created the theme music. You can follow the show on Twitter at Pixel People Pod. And keep up with Fire Rider on Twitter, Twitch, and Discord. Enjoying the show? Be sure to subscribe. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, I'd love it if you could leave a review. It helps more people find the show. See you next time.